G'day guys, I'm Aaron Schultz with episode 132 of the Outback Mind podcast. Thank you once again for joining in. Now, today we're talking about addiction, about drugs, about ice. Something that's pretty common and prevalent in regional towns is a drug called ice these days. Pretty much a shock to me coming from a country town and running into people from regional areas and sort of telling me about the ice epidemic in their communities and so forth. And I don't really understand too much about it. And I was very fortunate not to be mixed up in that sort of scene myself, you know, a few beers and that was about it. But these days people are looking for something else, there's lots of different things out there to settle you down, but really the short-term interventions don't help long-term, that's for sure. So I'm going to talk to a guy today by the name of Kane Nuttall. Kane was addicted to drugs, primarily ice, for about 12 years. We're going to listen to Kane's journey, but also what he did to be able to recover and come out the other side and do what he's actually doing now. He started an organisation called the Power and You Project, where he's helping a tremendous amount of people in southwest Victoria, from Geelong, sort of all the way through down along to Warrnambool there and throughout the state, primarily to be able to be more self-aware and deliver programs that can help people understand, how to self-regulate, but also to help them, get off addiction and drugs and those sorts of things. With guidance from people that have had lived experience, I think that's really key, to have people that have walked the path, primarily is huge, rather than, someone that may not have done so and just is following a textbook. I think people can relate to those that have been there and done it themselves much more if they've actually done it themselves, but also they can see that experience in someone else and help them share their journey to be able to help individuals beat things and get on with their lives better and more functionally. And, Kane's living proof of that, and I'm sure he's got plenty of stories of others that he's been able to help on the journey as well. So we're going to talk about his own experience, but also the team he's developed and what he's actually doing and his passion and so forth now. And isn't it amazing that people that, that go through tough times come out the other side much better and, we've got to get to the bottom of the ladder sometimes to climb out to be able to reach our full potential. What this program basically does is helps people that are struggling to get some, tools to be able to build some resilience, but also to help those that, may be struggling to prevent taking measures like Kane had and, having to come out the other side. So I'm sure you're going to really enjoy this chat. I really hope you can share this with other people that may be experiencing issues with amphetamines or drugs or addiction of any type. So please enjoy the conversation. Just want to make special mention to our partners, Green Nutritionals. If you're lacking something in your diet and you want to try and improve physically and mentally, I really encourage you to check out their website. They provide products which are sourced from the best places in the world, all organic, greennutritionals.com.au. Please check them out and support them. Also, if you're looking to possibly employ someone in Victoria or Tasmania or even Queensland, where I am, I really encourage you to look at MacForce Australia. They help people from incarceration. So they help people that have sort of, been locked up primarily to be able to transition out and get into sustainable employment with companies that can support them. And, my experience is if I can give someone a chance they are successful and they're supported, they become the best employees. So MacForce are really good at doing that for both men and women. And they've got some great people available and coming available. There's 16,000 people released from prison every quarter in Australia. A lot of them go back because they don't get opportunities to be able to work and sustain themselves. So please, if you're looking for someone or if you know a company that may be, please check out MacForce and give them a go. Really encourage that. It's MacForce, MacForce.com.au. Alrighty, hope you enjoy this chat. Please give me some feedback. Really appreciate it. Welcome to the Outback Mind podcast, Kane.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
No worries, matey. Thanks for joining me. All the way down there in Geelong at the moment. And you're not a Cat supporter by any chance?
not a chance, mate. I'm a Bulldog supporter.
So am I. Well done.
Born in the Western Suburbs, mate. Western Suburbs through and through.
True, yeah, mate. I barracked through. Well, I was a St Kilda supporter until I was four, and my grandmother bought me a Bulldogs jumper, so I became a Bulldogs supporter then. So I barracked for them for 46 years.
She must be a wise woman.
Yeah, well, she was pretty grumpy. Don't worry about that. But anyway, mate, I never thought I'd see them win a grand final, and I thought last year they might win another one, but they never did. But anyway, mate, that's bloody good to hear. There wasn't many of us around, but there's a few more now, I think. So
good to hear. Bandwagon jumpers.
That's it, mate. Absolutely, mate.
The more the merrier.
Oh, of course. Now, being a Western Suburbs boy, there's probably no coincidence that you ended up on drugs.
Unfortunately, the drugs are rife in most places, but yeah, the Western Suburbs really copped it. I grew up in Bacchus Marsh, but spent a lot of time in Western Melbourne, it was absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, give us a bit of a snapshot of your journey, mate. Like, as a young fella, was it a good upbringing for you? Were you into sports or anything else, or sort of how did it all unfold for you?
Yeah, so I was really lucky. You know, I was fortunate. I've still got two parents that are still together. I was played all sports: footy, cricket, basketball as a junior. But then towards sort of like my teenage years, 13, 14, I started to break out in acne.
Yeah.
And I was, really miserable within myself. I started taking a tablet called Roaccutane to try to get rid of the pimples, and that caused me severe depression, with a suicide attempt at an early age. And then I was sort of just looking for ways to become happy. And to be accepted. And then I met some dope smokers, and yeah, while you're smoking dope, mate, you're happy, you're laughing, you're accepted. And I was just happy being accepted, happy laughing, rather than the misery that surrounded me whenever I was by myself. So that's sort of, where it all started. And then, sort of just on from there, I was accepted into, some groups with some older guys, and started dealing a little bit of speed when I was 16, and pretty much just snowballed from there, mate. And it was there was some good times in that time, but when the addiction actually set in, there was a lot more darker times, and it was really testing times, to be honest,
mate. Amazing to hear you say that. It sort of brought back a few memories for me. With regards to, my experience with I suppose self-esteem and your appearance and so forth back then, you are really engaged with it, aren't you? With regards to the way you look and the opinions of others at that age, and I know I had issues with acne too, and I sort of was at the doctor trying to get all this stuff to put on it and all that too, and someone told me to stop putting cold water in my face after I had a shower, and that sort of seemed to clear things up. But I tried everything under the sun, Clearasil and all those ones that they used to flog on the telly. And it's amazing, that low self-esteem, you're right, we didn't know anything about depression and so forth back then, but it can really steer us into a dark place, and then we start looking for interventions to be able to get out of it.
Yeah, 100%. Kids can be really nasty as well. So, especially going through that year, you're going through a lot of transformations as yourself in your body, and just trying to find who you are and where you sort of sit in the world, and when you've got people being completely, horrible to you, it was pretty average, mate. But majority, most nights, more than often, I was crying in my bed of a nighttime every night, because I was so sad at what I looked like and how I felt and what others thought of me, and like I said, I would have done anything to not feel like that.
Yeah, mate, unbelievable. It's bringing back many memories, and other kids that I grew up with that really struggled with it. We used to tease a lot ourselves, it's a terrible, terrible thing for a young fella to to have to undertake, that's for sure. So I really sympathise with you, mate. So I'm interested to sort of hear, like, you sort of got into that journey, and did you sort of transition out of school and get into work or anything, or did the drugs sort of take over pretty early on?
Yeah, no, I was working. I did an apprenticeship at one of the local councils down here in Parks and Gardens, and, you know, I managed to hold a job for most part of it, but, yeah, the jobs ended up being really sporadic. You know, I was getting a few days concreting here, a few days concreting there, just helping out mates, you know, but drugs were my priority.
Mm.
The work was secondary, but, yeah, being high and being out and partying and not dealing with what was going on, you know, with me mentally, that was my priority. I didn't want to be sober. I didn't want to be, you know, having to think about, you know, how I was feeling. I just wanted to be completely out of it, doing things that, you know, at the time, you know, made me happy temporarily. It was like a band-aid to everything else that was going on in my life.
Yeah, makes so much sense, mate. We were the same, like, you know, I was in Horsham, and we were drinking in that primarily, and, you know, that was just accepted, you know, by society. You know, we're in pubs at 15, 16 and all those sorts of things, and, you know, nightclubs at 16 easily, and, you know, everything sort of transitioned from there. But you are sort of undertaking all these self-destructive behaviours and habits at an early age, which, you know, your brain's still developing until 25. That's what we're not really... you know, paying enough attention to, or we never really understood back then. But yeah, mate, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, like, if you had have had your time again now and you were in this environment where you could have got support, you know, would you have taken that, do you think? Because there's so much more support now than what there was back then.
Yeah, there definitely is, and it's more talked about now, where before I was just sort of seen as a drug addict, I had a drug problem, where now, you know, people are a little bit more open to seeing that there's actually things that are going on underneath the skin that are actually making the person, you know, participate in those kind of behaviours.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong, mate, there's certain things that I wish had never happened in my life. There's a lot of things that have also now led to me to doing what I'm doing now. So did I have to go through these things to be doing what I'm doing now? Probably, because it makes me be able to do my job now better.
Yes.
But in saying that, there's a whole lot of things that happened in that time that I wish didn't happen, that if I had the opportunity to take back or do things differently, I definitely would, you know. But, you know, out of something bad comes something good, and, you know, and now I'm trying to change, you know, certain things that happened in my life for the better, and hopefully I can, you know, repay and restore all the friendships and relationships that I've had, and certain things that have happened in my life by doing good, and, you know, me being able to come out the other side of my, you know, the depression and the drug use and the addiction and the darkness, and, you know, come out the other side, and hopefully I can, you know, but, you know, become, you know, the person that I always, you know, intended to be, the person that my family raised me to be. But, yeah, it's always a work in progress. But, you know, I've been clean now for nearly 7 years, and, you know, I'm, you know, well on the way of, you know, becoming that person that I always thought that I could be.
Yeah, good. Awesome to hear, mate. You know, if you think back about it, Kane, like when you were going through and your darkest moments, you probably were hanging around with some people that are probably no longer with us now, you know, that you know, may have lost their lives through drug use or taken their lives. But, you know, you are here for a reason, absolutely. You know, you've been able to come through, and that lived experience is so important. But what were some of the things that you remember that you regretted?
Being sort of caught up in the manufacturing of drugs, and the people who impacted my life at that time, you know, it's something that's caused other relationships to fail, and for me doing some things just to stay alive that impacted other relationships. You know, there's, like I said, selling drugs to people and, you know, and being, playing a part and ruining other people's lives, just by, out of pure desperation to feed my own habit and to stop me from, you know, being sort of stood over by these, you know, I don't know, thugs, mate, that's all pretty much what you could describe them as. And, Yeah, I just completely lost my way. And, you know, when you're vulnerable, you know, you'll do just about anything just to stay alive, I suppose. And yeah, and unfortunately, these kinds of people prey on the vulnerable, and you can't be a nice guy in the drug scene, and you end up becoming somebody that you're definitely not. So there's certain things that in that back end of my drug use that I wish that I could take back, but there's only one way to fix them, and that's by turning it around. And like I said, I've still got some bridges to build, and you know, I do intend to make sure that that I do those things that I always sort of said to myself that I would. And like I said, it's just a process, but we're well on the right track to making those things right.
Keep moving on. That's it, mate. Look, it's interesting, isn't it? And when you're in that state, or that I suppose, in that zone where you are around, you know, people that aren't too desirable, you're not thinking clearly and so forth too, but you're a beautiful young boy, as you said, a solid upbringing and all that. It was just like a diversion into low self-esteem, which took you away from that. You know, a young person listening to this, or anyone in general, like a lot of adults listening to this, have that low self-esteem moment, and that stays with them into adulthood. You know, to be able to revisit that and be kind to yourself, I think it's really important. You know, those moments of uncertainty are impermanent. They don't hang around. And, you know, I think these are the skills and tools we need to be able to help people understand that what you're going through now isn't going to be something that you're going to be going through forever, you know. And it's very hard for a young person to do with the brain still developing to actually see that. But I just think, you know, with support and so forth, it's so important to keep, the mentorship going of a young individual, because it's very hard to talk to someone in the family if you've got an issue going on. And, you know, those support networks that are external are really important. And, mate, you know, what was it like for you to actually, like, to say enough's enough, and then you decided to maybe move on and clean yourself up?
Yeah, to be honest, it was just a girl that I was sort of hanging out with at the time. She just said, you know, you need to pull your head in. What are you doing? And at that time, you know, I was using intravenously. You know, I just looked like a pincushion. I had big black bags under my eyes. I was an absolute mess, you know. But majority of the time, you know, living in survival mode in that, you know, pretty hardcore drug life, you know, everybody's just, you know, happy just to feed and bleed off you, you know. And I never really had anybody that said, you know, you need to sort your shit out, you know. So to me, that was like the start of it. But, you know, it come back to, you know, my mum and my dad, you know, telling me how much they love me and telling me how much, you know, they cared about me and knew that I could do good. So being able to sit down in front of them and tell them exactly what was going on was probably the hardest thing that I've ever had to do in my life. And then making a plan on how I was going to get forward and then actioning that plan was probably the second most hardest thing I've ever had to do. But I just stuck to my plan on just going day by day and just trying to make yesterday better than the last day, and understanding that if I did have a bad day, it didn't have to be a bad week, it didn't have to be a bad month. And I've always said, it's not about the mistakes you make, it's the way you go about fixing them that shows character. And you know, I just had to believe that, because you know, I had still my self-worth and the way that I see myself, because some of the things that I've been involved in, I just see myself as a piece of shit, to be honest. Yeah. And you know, trying to talk myself out of thinking, no, look, I'm not a bad person, I've made bad choices, just trying to change the way that I thought about myself was probably the hardest thing. And you know, again, like my favorite saying is, your vibe attracts your tribe. So, you know, if you're talking to yourself positively, if you're surrounding yourself by positive people, you're creating opportunity for yourself. Eventually, you know, things will open up for you. But yeah, I set my organization up on the back of the laws of attraction. And, you know, I really just had to try to, you know, restore my own self-worth and sort of process what had happened in my life. Because when you are high on drugs, you know, everything's just go, 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 and you don't even stop to process some of the things that have happened. So for me to actually take a step back and, you know, and have a couple of months clean at the time to be able to reflect on what had happened, you know, I just was really beating myself up about everything, but I could either go, look, I'm going to continue to beat myself up about it and go back that way, or I can start to work on a plan on how I can make things right. And with that plan, I went and participated in a yoga and meditation retreat on Gili Air when I was only 5 or 6 months clean, and I wrote a plan on what I wanted to achieve, and I was able to express my emotions in a group of people who were there for different things that were going on in their lives, and it was a really safe space for me to talk about things that had happened, and I was sort of able to cleanse myself of the guilt and the shame that I was holding on to. And then after that, that's when I started to put into action the plans for my organization called the Power in You Project.
Unbelievable, mate. Firstly, you need to be really proud of yourself for putting in the work and sticking to that, because it would have been so tough to not go back to the old ways, and you've had to lose a so-called friendship group and create a new one and so forth. But full credit to your parents for being there to support you and not judge you. That's the trap that a lot of people have, is that judgment of others, when they are trying to make a change. Like, if you've got that support, your nervous system can settle down, then all of a sudden you've got the ability to be able to grow and change. But when you're not getting supported by your peers, you're in this sympathetic mode straight away, and it's so hard to be able to break through that. You've got to work really, really difficult. Really, really hard to actually move through that change process on your own. But having that support of family is great. And a lot of people listening to this may not have that, but there's people like yourself now that are there to help people on that journey, which probably wasn't around back then. It's such a changed world, for the better in that sense. We always look beyond the behavior, Kane. Like, when I'm in a prison or when I'm in a yoga class, whether it be an educated person that's well off, that's going through trauma or gone through trauma, it doesn't matter. You've got to see beyond the behavior with compassion. If you can see compassion for the behavior and what caused that behavior, then you've got an opportunity to help an individual move through that and grow. And these are the things we need to be able to help people understand, so they can build that into their toolkit. So if there is a situation where things aren't going well, they can actually look at things a little bit differently rather than being judgmental, because we are pretty much still in a judgmental society, I guess, and we've got to be able to rise above that.
Yeah, unfortunately, like you said, we do live in a judgmental society, and like I said earlier, it's not about the mistakes you make, it's the way you go about fixing them that that shows your true colours. So if somebody gives you an opportunity to get a bit of a foot up to help to build some foundations, you've got to take those opportunities, and especially when people have been there themselves, they understand, and that's sort of like the essence of my whole organisation, where it's a non-judgmental space where we create hope, and it's created by people, who have had their own challenges, and without judgment, you'd be surprised how quickly things can turn around.
Yeah, well said, mate. Really well said. That is my real purpose, I suppose, too, is to be able to help people move through those judgments and opinions and the things that we're sort of in, we're indoctrinated in, we're given these sort of mindsets early on in our lives, and we stay there. We've got to be able to move through that and be more conscious. And it's amazing to hear you went to that yoga retreat 5 months after sort of cleaning yourself up, because that would have been confronting and difficult, and it probably really gave you an idea of what your potential could possibly be if you allowed it to happen.
Yeah, it did, mate. It was honestly a spur of the moment thing, and I just thought, if there's going to be a time where I'm going to get back on drugs, it's going to be over that New Year period. So, fortunately, there was a few taxes that I hadn't done in a couple of years. So when I did my taxes, I had some money there, so I just booked this trip. And the universe works in funny ways, mate. And I believe that that I had to go on that trip to get to where I am now. And the hardest day of that whole trip was probably the day where we weren't allowed to talk for 24 hours, because I love a chat. Yes. And happened to be in silence for 24 hours was one of the toughest days I've ever had. But it was the most productive, and and with that, I was able to come up with my ideas for the Power in You.
Turning inward, mate. That's called Vipassana. And that was a mini Vipassana, primarily the 240 hours, you know, so 10 days of it. But what happens then when you get out of your mind, you listen to your heart, your heart starts to take over again. And, you know, you weren't able to maybe listen to your heart since you were a little boy, possibly, you know. Yeah. And then the ego took over when you were having those issues with acne, and all of a sudden you're sort of caught above the shoulders, I guess, at the end of the day. So that's beautiful to hear that you're actually brave enough to go and experience something like that, because really, you know, in Western society, yoga and meditation primarily isn't, you know, mainstream as well as it should be yet, but it has the potential to be able to help individuals heal dramatically from a number of challenges, you know, because it gives us the tools to be able to get to know who we really are again.
Totally agree, mate.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff, you know. So, mate, so I'd like to know, like, obviously you were inspired to start up the Power in You project. Were you scared to do that? Was it something that you were, like, sort of going back and forth with, or did it just sort of happen naturally and then sort of built and developed from there?
Yeah, well, actually, I had a lady come out and interview me about my challenges when I was only about 3 or 4 months clean, and I said to her in that article, can you please put in that I'm going to start my own organisation, and she's like, oh, I won't do it just yet, you know, I don't want to put any more pressure on you. Yeah, but I just had in my head that I firmly believe that I could help people, I could help the right people for the right reasons, and with it, it was obviously... Oh no, it was a big pipe dream to start, I suppose, you know, an ex addict. I was walking around with a book and a folder and walking into organisations saying, someone give me a go, someone give me a go. And I was studying drug and alcohol and mental health at the time, and I sort of had doors shut on me and people asking, you know, am I religious? And I'm saying no. And they're like, oh, we're not interested. Is it 12 step? I'm like, well, you know, and I sort of didn't know what it was, but all I knew was that, you know, I wanted it to be a holistic program where we could help people in multiple parts of their life. I eventually met a fella in the gym, and he used to be a local MP, and he started talking to me about putting a plan in place of what it actually looked like, the when, the what's, the hows. So he helped me do that. And then an organization called Community Veracity were open to talking to me, you know, and we facilitated a meeting, and they said, look, we'll give you, you know, 9 hours a week to run your program. So after 2 years of the initial idea, we started running the program. We actually turned 5 this year, which is a massive milestone. But we started as a drug and alcohol support service, you know, and then over the 5 years, we've grown into supporting people with drug and alcohol mental health and post-release from prison. So it's, with our 3 entry points, it's just grown organically, where we work with a lot of complex clients who are generally put in the too hard basket. We're having, you know, some really, really great outcomes. We now run 26 sessions a week, doing everything from emotional foundation sessions to self-defense. We have women's groups, cooking groups. You know, we like to do it all, social community connection. And I've got 16 staff now. We've just employed a forensic psych. 2022 is going to be, you know, a huge year for the organisation. It blows me away, to be honest. It's a bit of a spin out. We're doing something right, and I'm really, really grateful for the amount of amazing people that I have around me to point me in the right direction, to pull me up when I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, and, you know, to guide me so we can continue to be, you know, as best as organisation we can, to support the people that need us the most.
Unbelievable, mate. Again, you need to be proud of yourself, but you certainly did your apprenticeship. You know, you know what it's like. You've been there. You come out the other side. But the burning desire to be able to help others is there, and it's never going to go away. You know, it's so needed. And, you know, to be able to diversify and do what you're doing now is tremendous. Like, is your funding? Is it easy to get that, or you got to sort of battle for funding all the time? Are you sort of you're able to manage that well? Is that something that's coming naturally to you?
Yeah, well, we're a registered charity, So, you know, majority of our funding does come from philanthropic funding. So again, it comes to us, you know, applying for different grants. Some you win, some you lose, but we're getting better at writing grants. We're getting better at winning grants. And over the past probably 18 months, we've now set our toes into the NDIS. So we're supporting guys coming out of prison with NDIS plans, and we're doing a lot of mental health stuff, lived experience stuff. And yeah, it's a part of subsidising what we do, but again, you know, it's just another stream to help us be sustainable. So we're always looking for, you know, for funding opportunities. You know, I tell my story, I try to get in front of as many people as I possibly can. But again, you know, we're growing organically. And I've always said that, you know, that I won't put quantity over quality. You know, quality is what we always want to be. And, you know, again, it comes back to just, you know, making sure that we're growing organically and having, you know, the right resources to be able to service, you know, our participants' needs, and making sure that, you know, their level of care is getting met, you know, at every level.
Yeah, awesome, mate. That's so good to hear. And you're right, there is some service providers that get big and they lose the focus of the individual. You know, it becomes about stats and numbers and data and all that shit, you know. And at the end of the day, it's great, it's needed, but the heart-centered delivery is really what's lacking. You know, if you can stick to that and make sure that's your core of what you do without getting too caught up in the compliance and the you know, the financial side of things, and just do it from your heart, everything else will take care of itself. I really believe that.
Yeah, I hope so, mate. It's again, you know, I've been there, you know, and I've been on the I've been on the other end of some of these services, getting handballed here and handballed there and put on waiting lists and all the rest of it. So we've always prided ourselves on if somebody's built up the courage to ask for help that day, they'll get help that day. You know, there's no waiting list. You know, depending on their circumstance, they will get seen within 24 hours. Because you've only got that small window, you know, to help individuals, and you know, we want to make sure that, you know, that we're right there, ready to go. You know, when that individual does reach out for help, and you know, again, you know, it's hard. If you get put on a waiting list, there's a fair chance that we can lose that person. So. You know, again, you know, we really pride ourselves on making sure that, you know, if someone's built up the courage to get help, they at least get heard, and then they get seen face to face within 24 hours. And yeah, that will always be the essence of what we do. And again, like I said, you know, it's we want to be there for the people and make sure that they get enough time as they need, rather than sort of just, you know, in and out, you know, because it just doesn't work. It takes time to build rapport and trust, and, you know, our program's open-ended, so people can come for as little or as long as they like, and, you know, it's everybody's recovery is different, you know, and you can't put a time limit on how long it takes somebody to get better. And you know, we make sure that, you know, that these guys have access to supports, you know, for as little or as long as they like.
Incredible, mate. So is it only people in the area there that can use your services, or is it people, it's just someone listening to from this in another area, can they connect with you, or how does it work?
Yeah, so at the moment we're based in Geelong, and majority of our users of the service, you know, are from this area. We've started delivering some programs in Werribee at the end of last year, and we've also just started touching our toes into Colac and Warrnambool. But you know, they're probably places that we will be reaching out to probably midway through the year and starting to sort of ramp up, you know, service delivery, you know, in those areas. But like I said, mate, we could deliver this program anywhere. We've built the program so it can be, you know, delivered. It comes with, you know, it comes with the PowerPoints. It comes with, you know, a teacher's guide. It comes with the questions. But at the end of the day, it takes the right person to be able to deliver this program. So, you know, we are focusing on being the best, you know, best support service Geelong has ever had. And, you know, who knows what the future may bring. But yeah, we just want to make sure that what we're doing is 100% here in our community of Geelong. And you know, if yeah, like I said, mate, we've got no ceiling on what we can achieve, but we want to make sure that, you know, it's always going to be done to the best of our ability, and you know, no shortcuts. So the people using the program will always get that best level of care.
Yeah, awesome. And really, listening to you speak about this passionately compared to listening to a CEO of an organisation which is probably disconnected with the service delivery is so different. You know, you really, again, need to be proud of yourself because you're at the front line of it still. And you know, the best is yet to come. Oh, I really, really know that, and I believe that. And you know, I just think that you've got such a great model there that can be expanded to other areas, which can help a lot of lives. So, if that being the driver, you know, who in Central Queensland can we help? Who in regional WA can we help? Who in Tassie can we help? You know, if you can look at that as you being your primary driver, then you build it and they will come. You know, there's people there that need the support. They just need support from the right organisations that recognise them and can do exactly what your mum and dad did to you all those years ago, you know. So
yeah, and a lot of guys that come to our programs just don't have that person that cares for them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's we want to be that person. We want to be their rock. We want to be the person that's proud of them. We want to be the person that says that they can, you know, they can be anything in this life. And we are, it's the Power and You Project family. We're all in it together, and that's me included, you know. And I still deliver programs. I still am out doing one-on-one support. You know, it's the reason that I started the program. So, I don't ever want to lose that because I know how important it is for the people who are using the program to know how much we care about them and know that we do understand, you know, their challenges and their frustrations and everything that's going on. And, you know, and we are going to be there for the long haul to be able to help support them and give them foundations to grow upon.
Yeah, awesome. Again, awesome, mate. So good to hear. So how can people that are listening, reach out and get in touch with you or maybe look at the work you're doing?
Yeah, so our website is thepowerinyouproject.org.au. Pretty much all our information's there. We've got to do a little bit of an update that will happen in the next few weeks. But, you know, you can find me, Kane Nuttall, on LinkedIn, The Power In You Project on LinkedIn and Instagram as well, and Facebook. You know, that our numbers, well, my numbers all over it. So, you know, if anybody's, you know, wants to reach out, you know, by all means, people can, you know, can call and, you know, if there's any way that we can help or give guidance or, just for a chat, please, by all means, reach out.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I really appreciate that. If anyone's listening, just to reach out to me, if they want, I can put you in touch with Kane. Just email me at support@batmind.com.au. So, mate, really grateful for the chat. Really awesome. Love what you're doing. Love you as an individual. I think you're such an inspiration, you know, to not only yourself, you know, with what you've done. Yeah, as I said, you've got to be proud of that, but also your family, and a credit to, to everyone that knows you, to be able to sort of, you know, use your experience and use others, not use others, but have others walk the path with you that can help, you know, inspire other people to do exactly what you've done and show that it's possible. You know, a lot of people lose hope and they don't know how to turn the corner, but if they can sort of get the support of someone that's walked the path, I just think it's so valuable. And mate, really, as I said, the best yet to come. So keep doing what you're doing and inspiring others, mate. And 2022 is going to be a great year and beyond. So I look forward to watching your journey.
Thanks, Aaron. I really appreciate your kind words, mate. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity. If you have me on the Outback Mine, I'm watching from afar all the great work you're doing as well, and look forward to continue to work with you, closely to continue to support these guys that need us.
Yeah, good on you, mate.